The Brett Kavanaugh Supreme Court confirmation hearings were really the ultimate warning sign of just how dedicated the opposition to President Trump was. However, what we saw was only a part of the entire scene. The next guest, along with her co-author, presents the complete picture of those hearings, along with the strategies and political plays within them. Their huge best-selling book is Justice on Trial, The Kavanaugh Confirmation and the Future of the Supreme Court, co-authored by senior editor at The Federalist, Molly Hemingway, along with my next guest, policy director with the Judicial Crisis Network, Carrie Severino. Thanks for being here today, Carrie.
Great to be here.
And Judicial Crisis Network website, judicialnetwork.com. To give Molly a plug here, too, The Federalist is thefederalist.com. You write about, like I said in the introduction, really from point A to point Z with everything that happened. There was a lot that happened, but Carrie and Molly tell it in a very easy-to-absorb, concise way. But you also point out, too, at the beginning of the story, the GOP track record recently, when I say that, the tail end of the 20th century of selecting Supreme Court candidates, it was not really a Hall of Fame winning record, was it?
No, in fact, for most of our lifetime, we've had a vast majority of the members of the Supreme Court be Republican nominees, but many of the most liberal members, in fact, were those same Republican nominees. We just, Justice John Paul Stevens, who just died last week, he was one of those. He was a Ford appointee, but he was longtime leader of the liberal wing of the bench. So one of the backstories to how this confirmation process happened is really the story of how Republicans started realizing what they were doing wrong and how they were choosing nominees, and then how, when they decided to start choosing nominees who did have a judicial track record and a solid judicial philosophy, how that incited a lot of pushback from the left, and we have seen increased hostility to these solid Republican nominations ever since. And so it's been a process of learning how to deal with that, you know, from Bork to Thomas, and then now, of course, a new low with the Kavanaugh confirmation.
Yes, indeed, definitely a new low. Just when he thought the Borking was the ultimate, and even the Clarence Thomas with the cocaine and discussion of a porn star as part of a congressional hearing too. But obviously, the process begins with the list from the president. But past that point, how engaged was the White House in everything? Because as everything poured out and blew up, it presented probably for especially people who were foreign to this political environment some significant challenges.
Yes, the White House was a key involved in this process. In fact, we had a president in President Trump who many people thought wasn't going to be as, you know, they didn't really know what he would do in terms of judges. And we talked about how important him coming up with a list of judges was. And it's amazing, as we kind of were talking about before, this has been one of the most effective White Houses in terms of choosing judges. So instead of just picking maybe the path of least resistance every time, it has been a series of judges who had a long track record of great nominees. You know, and Brett Kavanaugh was someone who was mentioned way back during his campaign as someone who might be a good person for that list, finally makes it on the list in 2017. And then when the president chooses him, he really was looking at his incredible resume. You know, he's got Ivy League education. He had 12 years in the bench. And then the track record there where he had leading decisions on the Second Amendment, on preserving the constitutional limits on government and the separation of powers, pushing back on the overgrowth of the administrative state. Those were all things that really appealed to President Trump, partly because they showed the characteristic of courage. And that's something that Republicans realized was necessary, particularly after Chief Justice Roberts, in the sense that he may have known what the right answer was in some of these cases, but not had the courage to make a decision he knew was going to get pushback. It turns out, in this case, of course, choosing someone with courage was also key for making it even through the process itself.
No doubt about that. We're talking with Carrie Severino, who, along with Molly Hemingway, is a co-author of Justice on Trial, The Kavanaugh Confirmation, and The Future of the Supreme Court. Carrie is also policy director with the Judicial Crisis Network, judicialnetwork.com is that website, and you are listening to Issues and Ideas. When there is a strong opposition, which there was no question there was going to be that even before the hearings began, how much more of a minefield and how much more convoluted do things become when among that opposition you have, well, at least two, and at least one point, there could have been three wannabe presidential candidates on the Democratic side who were going to posture and pose along with be a part of the opposition.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that really just upped the ante. I think things have been getting crazier and crazier in terms of how judicial nominations have been run for a while. But you had Senators Booker, Harris, and Klobuchar all on the committee. And so his hearings were an opportunity for them to effectively cut film for their campaign ads. They were, I think, all hoping they could get that gotcha moment. And it really backfired in a lot of ways. And then Senator Booker with his Spartacus moment charade, where he was trying to be a martyr of himself by releasing documents that were confidential, that had been shared under the Presidential Record Act in a confidential manner, and he was just releasing them publicly. Not even terribly helpful documents for his point. It was really just kind of trying to be the bad boy. Senator Harris trying to have a Perry Mason moment, I think. Senator Klobuchar, actually, of all of those, comported herself fairly well, but I thought it was amusing to see people like Liz Warren would show up at the hearing. She's not even on the committee, but, you know, 2020, it's like nominees, it's like a moth to a flame. They see something wild and crazy, and they've got to get right in the middle of it and be as extreme as possible.
I mentioned when I talked with Molly a couple of weeks ago, too, how that was probably the first moment we saw what Lindsey Graham's potential was, being finally off of John McCain's leash and collar with his moment on the committee when it was time for him to be called on, and he let loose with something probably nobody in that room expected.
Absolutely, because Senator Graham actually has a history of being one of the more moderate Republicans on judges. He will vote for basically any judge that he seems minimally qualified. So he's not someone who would look at their judicial philosophy and say, this person's going to be a liberal activist on the bench, I'm not going to vote for them. And that came out in his speech when he said, look, you know, say hello to Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan, because I voted for them. And basically his frustration that comedy and that reaching across the aisle was not reciprocated. I hope that was a moment where he remembers, because unfortunately the history has been one of attempts by Republicans to let's get back to the way things used to be and try to have everyone being nice and voting for each other's nominees. That's not how the Democrats are playing the game now. And I think that was a moment where Lindsey Graham realized we're in a new world. And I think a lot of Republicans should look at that and take note.
Now, allegations are tough to have solidifying effect unless you have proof. Was that the standard that was being applied when Professor Ford came into town finally, or was Kavanaugh going to be treated as guilty unless he could prove himself innocent no matter what was going to happen?
The interesting thing about these allegations is they were this amazing mix of specificity and vagueness that made it basically impossible to disprove. And it's characteristically very difficult to prove a negative. You can't prove something didn't happen very easily, right? Especially when it's something is this vague, where sometime during this whole summer, something happened, and you can't say, well, I was out of town that weekend, because there's no particular date. You can't say I've never been to that house because there's not an actual location. So it was very difficult. This is why we have a system in due process of having innocence until proven guilty, because otherwise anyone can come up and just make an allegation against someone. And if you were tasked then with proving every allegation wrong, I think everyone would be subject to, you know, almost anyone destroying their reputation and their career. So we had to have to take the allegations seriously enough to look into them, but that also means taking them seriously enough to say, you know what, just like any allegation, you do need to have evidence to support it. And what we found as the Senate investigated it, as we had those hearings, that not only did the evidence not go to prove her allegation, in fact, all the evidence we had seemed to be pointing in the other direction, whether it was people who were alleged witnesses who said they hadn't been there and didn't even know Brett Kavanaugh, to strange things like her inability to know how she got home from this event, or the shifting story where she came up with different numbers of people who were there, different numbers of boys and girls. So the details did not go to support what she was actually alleging.
When you look back at everything, this is just part of what Kerry and Molly touch on in Justice on Trial, but when you look back at the entire timeline of the Kavanaugh hearing from start to finish, how much did the process get damaged, and how much at risk are we now at someone who is justly qualified, and I'll say from either side of the political spectrum, anyone who is certainly, obviously, maybe even overqualified by saying, you know what, I really don't need to do that.
Yeah, I think that is a real concern Molly and I had. We learned that Ashley Kavanaugh, before her husband was even nominated, was literally praying that he would not get the nomination, because she had been through two very difficult confirmation processes with him before. They were very contentious, trying to get him on the D.C. circuit in the first place. And she thought, you know, he's got a great job. It's life tenure. Our family's doing really well. We don't need this kind of circus in our life. Of course, she could not have possibly imagined how horrible it, in fact, would become. So I worry that the next time there's a vacancy, especially if it's a very high-stakes one, like would happen if you had, say, a liberal nominee replaced by Trump or a liberal justice replaced by Trump, what would that look like for the person? And are our best and brightest men and women going to say, you know what, I'd rather not be considered for this because it's just going to be too brutal?
And if they do take the nomination and go into the main room, you might as well just give them a sport jacket with a bullseye painted on it.
Oh, I think it's no doubt whoever the next Supreme Court nominee is will be walking around like that. And that's not the cost we should really require for someone to get involved in public service.
But if the nominee is someone with a backbone like Justice Kavanaugh, I think that maybe the fears will be subsided by someone with a strong constitution and a desire to say, no, you're not going to push me down. So, well, to be determined, as they say, the book is Justice on Trial, The Kavanaugh Confirmation, The Future of the Supreme Court, co-authored by Molly Hemingway, who is senior editor at The Federalist, thefederalist.com. My guest today, Carrie Severino, who is also policy director with the Judicial Crisis Network, judicialnetwork.com. Carrie, thanks so much for bringing the truth and the reality to what was trying to be made into a fantasy by many people, and thanks for being here today.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.